Let me hear that Vinny Pasquantino home run call again from yesterday afternoon's Omaha-Louisville game. It was actually started in the morning. I think it was like 10:05 first pitch. I like that. But the Royals didn't play, so they didn't lose, so that's a good thing. But now they start a four-game series on the road against the Minnesota Twins, who just swept them a few games ago. But Omaha did play, and they beat Louisville 19-0. And the star of the game was Vinny P, Vinny Pasquantino.
2-2. Pasquantino swings, fly ball, hit well to right. Bowers turns around, and it is gone. Second home run of the game for Vinny Pasquantino. This one a grand slam. He's driven in five today, has three extra base hits, and the Storm Chasers running away with it here in the fifth inning. They lead it 13-0.
Vinny Pasquantino goes 5-for-7 with four runs scored, five ribbies, two doubles, and two home runs on the day. Nick Prado also had a good day, 2-for-6. Three runs scored, three ribbies, and a walk. He had his eighth home run. Pasquantino's two home runs put him at 12 now. He also hit his 13th and 14th double, hitting clean. So that's a cleanup hitter. There you go. That's a cleanup hitter playing first base, Vinny Pasquantino. Also, Jackson Kowar with his third consecutive good start, three solid starts in a row, so that's good news. He goes five innings, three hits, no runs, two walks, nine strikeouts. And so now for Jackson Kowar, in his last three starts down at AAA, he's thrown 16 innings. He's only given up two runs, 1.13 ERA, 10 hits, 21 strikeouts and four walks, only 14 base runners in 16 innings. I know it's AAA, but he was struggling mightily at AAA. And so now he's put together three good starts in a row for Omaha. But again, the star of the show, Vinny P, Vinny Pasquantino. And if you look at his numbers across the board now, they are outstanding. Played 42 games. He has 152 at-bats. His slash line is 296, 396, 638. Good for an OPS of over 1,000, 1,034. He has 14 doubles, one triple, 12 homers, 45 ribbies. He has walked 24 times and only struck out 27 times in his 152 at-bats. And so just terrific numbers across the board. And there are many things wrong with the Kansas City Royals. All right? Right now, the biggest problem is the pitching staff. The bullpen, when you do get a good starting, when you do get a good performance from the starting pitcher, now the bullpen blows it. They can't hold a lead. Sam McDowell tweeted out yesterday that the Royals have the worst bullpen ERA in baseball. The worst bullpen ERA in baseball at 486. And that, the worst ERA in baseball for the bullpen, that's outperformed the rotation that has a 496 ERA. So the team ERA is the worst in the American League. You have a pained look on your face.
I mean, when you put it like that, it makes it sound bad.
Yeah, you're right, you know. It's all in the message, isn't it? And so Alec Lewis took the baton from Sam McDowell and went even deeper into the horrific numbers from the pitching staff. Staff ERA, 4.91. That's 28th in Major League Baseball, last in the American League. Walks per nine is 28th in the Major Leagues. Strikeout per nine, 30th. Pitches per inning pitched, 29th. Staff whip, 27th. And on and on. So clearly, Carlos Santana, Ryan O'Hearn, they're not the biggest problem. Well, they're a problem, not the only problem. The pitching staff across the board, the numbers are terrible. But oddly enough, I feel a little bit better about the rotation because Daniel Lynch has shown promise. This version of Brady Singer has shown promise. Zach Greinke had a really bad start his last game, giving up 7 earned runs against Arizona. But he's had more good starts than bad. And so that's been on. And Keller, the same thing. He's been good for the most part. And those are the four pitchers you have coming up against the Minnesota Twins. So there's not one guy there I feel awful about. You know, Heasley's been the worst of the bunch, and you know, even he's been all right. He walked 6 guys in 5 innings. He only gave up 3 runs and left the game with a 6-3 lead because the bullpen said, "Hold my beer." But what I will tell you is, it's just the message that it sends when it comes to Vinny Pasquantino. He's 24 years old. He's got an OPS of over 1,000. This is what he is as a hitter. He's done this at every level. You look at his his slash line, Nate, is 296, 396, 638. His career in the minors, it's 298, 388, 585. Right now, his OPS is 1,034. His career OPS in the minors, 973. It's all consistent. That's what he is. And as long as they parade Carlos Santana and Ryan O'Hearn around as productive Major League Baseball first baseman slash designated hitters, it's extremely difficult to take the idea serious that they're actually trying to win baseball games. Because you can't have a guy as good and as ready as Vinny Pasquantino. And as Alec Lewis has written in The Athletic, opposing scouts say he's ready. I don't know. Looks ready to us. Other people think he's ready. Sure looks ready to me. Royals don't think he's ready. And when it continued, it's no big surprise of what they're doing. They're trying to milk any production whatsoever out of Carlos Santana so they can flip him. They're trying to do the Jorge Soler dance with him. Okay? Problem is, you could have traded him to Boston, or you could have traded him before last year's deadline, and you decided to hold on to him. That is something that this team has suffered from. The unwillingness to trade a guy when he does have some value. And they hold on to him too long, to where he no longer has value. I really can't imagine anyone wanting Carlos Santana. I guess if he gets hot for 2 or 3 weeks and some team suffers a devastating injury to their first baseman or DH, they could trade for him. I mean, there was a point where I didn't see anyone trading for Jorge Soler. But Soler, I think, and it's proven out, even at the time he was struggling, he had more upside than Carlos Santana. I don't think Carlos Santana in any way, shape, or form, you could say, is an ascending player or a player that's even leveled. He's a descending player. He's on a decline. And so I'm not interested in hearing, hey, we're trying to do whatever we can to win a baseball game. Well, then Vinny Pasquantino should be in the lineup for this baseball team every day. The Royals, not Omaha. And that's it. Period. The production out of first base is so bad, it's amazing that they haven't made the move yet. Is that going to be the end all fix all? No, because there's still a bad team with a bad pitching staff. And I don't know who's held accountable for that. Is it Cal Eldred? Clearly not. Terry Bradshaw lost his job as the hitting coach. Now the hitting's been better. It's been more productive since he's been gone. So was that the problem? Was that the reason? Was that a wake-up call to some of the hitters? Who knows? But the product is, and the production's been better. It's just not about winning anymore. It's not about winning for this team. They're buried. They're 12 games out. They've lost 6 in a row. And so if this is about development, this is about if it's about development, Pasquantino should be in the lineup. If it's about winning, Pasquantino should be in the lineup. Whatever the approach is, the answer is to have him in the lineup. And it gets old to see them roll out these guys who have no future with the team, no upside with the team. What's the point? What is the point? except for trying to get lucky and get Santana hot for a couple of weeks and flip him, which I would find, I'd be surprised if someone traded for him. But I've been surprised before. But I'm not interested in listening how desperate they are to win as long as they have gigantic black holes in the lineup like Santana and Ryan O'Hearn, while Vinny Pasquantino is putting up numbers as good or better than any prospect in minor league baseball. And again, he's not 19 or 20 years old. We got to be, we got to be careful. We got to play. He's 24 years old. Let's effing go. Nate Fucati there. That's it. Any comments on the pitching numbers I gave you? Anything that I said? Any comments as the Royals meet the Minnesota Twins for a four-game series in Minnesota?
I just have to think that it's a matter of time before Pasquantino comes up, and it's got to be soon. It just needs to be soon. And I do think, look, the Royals have a tendency to get dug in on their positions sometimes, and they're obviously dug in on the Cal Eldred thing right now, which, whatever. I mean, you know, that's – I don't know that he's the reason that the pitching's not doing well, or that he's not, but they're dug in. Like, they're going to be loyal. They've kind of put their flag in the ground. I don't know how far it goes before they would make a move there. And they seem committed to trying to get Santana going so that they can trade him and make something out of that contract. Whereas, as you said, it seems to be a little bit of a mixed message when Chris Bubich goes out there and gets rocked and Mike Matheny says, hey, we got to win games. You know, we can't have starts like this. So they send him to the minors. Well, they can't send Santana to the minors. So they seem to be, you know, they're going to keep pushing him out there. They have other players who have not produced. I mean, that's kind of like, to go back to it, and I know that people think, like, you know, that we unfairly pick on him or whatever, but it's always, you know, like, that's one of the things that's always hit me about Mondesi. He's never produced, really. Like, he had a brief period where he produced it in the minor leagues. But if you look at most of the years that he spent in the minor leagues, he didn't really ever produce there. And if you look at his major league career, he had part of one good season. But outside of that, he hasn't produced at the major league level either, and they just make him the everyday shortstop because of what they think he can't, because the position that they have on him, the way they feel about him.
Seems like sometimes they predetermine who's going to be successful.
And, you know, so then, like, you look at Vinny Pasquantino and you talk about him, and look, this is his first go-around in AAA, so I have no problem with the fact that they've wanted him to have some sustained success there for a little while. But I think 2 months is a pretty good sustained period of success. That's usually when you look at their track record of when it's time to call a guy up. Guy puts 2 good months together, and that's what it's been, right? Like, it's not like he's just got hot for the past week. He's been hitting and I know that his batting average wasn't high, but his on-base percentage, everything else, his OPS, everything was tracking the same way. So I like to think that it's, like I said, I like to think it's a matter of time. I guess we'll see. But, you know, I mean, look, his OPS was 963 in Burlington. His OPS was 965 in Northwest Arkansas. And now his OPS is 103, you know, 1,034 at AAA. So, and I wouldn't be surprised if he struggles when they call him up, and that's fine.
And also, to the point of, you know, you're talking about small sample size and whatever else, Carlos Santana's numbers, I know he's had a back-to-back decent couple of games, but going back to the second half of last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Second half of last year, 69 games, 284 plate appearances. His slash line was an average of 176, on base at 254, slug of 246. So he's been that bad since the All-Star break of last year. That was him. That's shockingly bad. The entire second half of last year and the all of this year. So then what makes you think, well, he's a veteran, he's going to come out of it. He didn't come out of all of the second half of last year and into this year. So we're getting close to almost a full season of the worst production of any first baseman in Major League Baseball. So I don't see how you can say that, well, we're trying to win. And he's still in the lineup, and when he's not, O'Hearn is. And sometimes they're back to back. Also of note too, we talked about those bad numbers. We'll continue to monitor the progress of Jake Junis in the Giants rotation. He went six innings yesterday and only gave up two runs and got the win. And now for the season, he's got a 2.76 ERA and a 0.94 whip. And he's pitching very well for the San Francisco Giants after, like I said, going six strong innings and giving up two runs against the New York Mets yesterday. And again, that's an indictment of the Royals. He was doing well in the rotation last year. They yanked him out, put him in the bullpen. He fell apart. Things didn't go well for him for the rest of the year. He ends up leaving the organization, going to the Giants. And right now, he's one of the most pleasant surprises in the National League right now for San Francisco. And that sucks if you're a Royals fan, because the pitching across the board, we just illustrated that. It's terrible. Statistically, there's nothing good you can say about the pitching. But that's where we are right now. And we'll see if the Royals can somehow turn things around against the Minnesota Twins in this upcoming four-game series right now, as they are 12 games out behind Minnesota and in last place with the worst run differential in the American League. Back after this on WHB.
It's time for the Women's Sports Weekly Spotlight, presented by Margarita's award-winning Mexican food.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Thursday, May 26th. Coming up, we'll talk to Brian Haney at 9:05, and we'll play another interview conducted by Marco Marquez down at the Sporting KC match last night, so definitely tune in at 9:30. Marco promises it'll be one of the best interviews you've ever heard. So.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
All right.
Guarantees it or else, he said. Right now, we are happy to be joined by Kathy Nelson, President and CEO of the Kansas City Sports Commission and Foundation. Kathy, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning.
So a lot of exciting things are going on right now. And, you know, of course, maybe you know this, but Nate Buchanan's kind of a soccer guy. He gets excited about, he loves it.
A little bit.
Yeah. And,
little
bit. And Marco is too. And so we were just talking earlier this week about how things are starting to get closer and closer to us finding out whether or not Kansas City is going to be one of the cities involved with the World Cup, and of course Arrowhead, and they're one of the finalists. And so Nate thought, hey, let's talk to Kathy Nelson and find out where this is at and how things are looking, because obviously that would be such a huge event for Kansas City to host. And so just tell us a little bit about what the process has been and where we're at and what the hopes are.
Oh my gosh, I don't know that there's enough time for me to explain the process. We have been working on this bid since kind of middle of 2017.
Wow.
So when you think about the work that goes into it, and it's not just like we put the bid in 2018 and we've sat quiet. There has been years and years of work that has gone into it, between working with the venue and working with the city and now the state and both states, and of course Sporting KC. I can't even begin to tell you how many hours has been in this. So we're at the end, though, kind of. We now are at that end where they will decide which cities will host the matches. So that's one part of World Cup. You have to remember, no matter what, we are a World Cup city now moving forward. Even if we don't get matches, which is the ultimate goal, we still will be considered and heavily considered to host base camps, which is where the countries come in, live here, train here, their fans live here with us, and then they might fly to other matches. And that would still happen even if we do host matches.
So the big, like you said, the big goal, I mean, it would be awesome to have teams training here and all of that, and the facilities make that great. But, you know, obviously a person like me and Marco, we want to know if the World Cup is going to be, in terms of, like, are there going to be games here? Because that would be so transformative. And we're going to get to the NFL draft here in a minute, because I know you guys are getting, you know, busy getting ready for that too. And just like seeing what it was like in Vegas this past year, these are massive events. And I'm just curious, like how, when we find out here coming up in June, does the World Cup still 4 years away? How much work would it then be to try to get this city ready for what would be coming our way if, in fact, we get to host some World Cup games?
Yeah, it'll be 4 years of work. And we're actually behind. They should have decided this in December of 2020. So when you think about it, we're a couple years behind in planning. Not anyone's fault, because it's COVID, of course, and other things happening, because they were delayed in being able to fly over to North America to see all of our cities in person. Those site visits didn't happen until October. But again, after June 16th and that decision is made, if we are selected, there will be a group from Kansas City that will then fly to New York on Sunday, the 19th, and we will be there for 3 or 4 days in meetings, learning about, as a host city, how do these contracts get signed? What's next, you know, as far as timeline goes? And then they will be in our cities in August. So it kicks in immediately. We will set up a third party or a third company, an LLC, to help manage all of this and then hire for that. So there's a lot in front of us before December hits if we're selected. And then the work really begins, right? Construction of Arrowhead, all of the safety and security measures, where's fans held, how all that comes together.
So like a lot of times when announcements like this get made, the people that are, you know, on the receiving end of it, sometimes it depends on the decision. They might already be tipped off, like, hey, we feel pretty good about this. We can't say anything, but we know.
Right.
Sometimes you're just stuck watching, and you have no idea. Is that, like, are you on pins and needles? Do you get a sense ahead of time or anything? Or are you going to be like the rest of us just waiting to find out? What is it on June 17th?
June 16th, and we have no idea. There are days where I feel really good. Like, I was speaking with Jake Reed, the president of Sporting, yesterday, and Matt Kenny with the Chiefs, and Catherine Holland leads our bid for us. And we talk daily. Sometimes we talk hourly. And some days we feel really good, and then another day I may have had a conversation with L.A. or Atlanta or Denver, and I'm like, wait, they feel just as good as I do right now. We can't all get it. So then you go, okay, wait a minute, where are we? There's still pieces of the puzzle that we are still working on. It's an exhausting process, and we've been spending hours every day the last couple of weeks. We have things due back to them by May 31st. Every city does. So we have a lot of work ahead of us the next few days to meet that deadline of May 31st, and then with the anticipated announcement of the 16th. So I don't know. People are like, oh, you probably don't. Like, no, we have no idea. And I'm a big believer in we win and we lose together. We will all find out together on June 16th. And then we'll have a little private party after the announcement. Maybe celebration, maybe a little therapy. We'll see how that plays out.
Okay, so, we're all, you know, lifelong Kansas Cityans. You know, we're super biased, right? And we
right.
see, like, the great support Sporting Kansas City does, and the support the Current is getting, and what a great soccer town Kansas City is. And so we look at it, you know, through our lens and think, well, of course we should be one of the cities. Why wouldn't we be? But when you see the other cities and you have a better understanding than we do of what they're offering. And so if somebody asks you, tell me why Kansas City should be one of the cities. Why Kansas City should host some World Cup matches? What's the answer that you give to someone who's not from Kansas City, who doesn't understand the town and have the love for KC that we do?
Well, we really focus on a few things, and I'll really gear this towards my answer for FIFA. You know, they had never been to Kansas City. Most of them had been to L.A. or New York or even Miami, but most of them had not spent time in Kansas City. And I could not get over how they were like, wait, you are so centrally located to everything, not just the four corners of the United States, but for the World Cup, your four-hour flight from anywhere of any of the cities that will host matches in Canada and Mexico, that's a big deal. We make it easy for people because of our location. So that's a huge win for us. Mm-hmm. Then when you look at us, we are two states combined and united. And that's really what this bid was all about back in 2017, 2018, is united as the North American bid. We took that and now are uniting states and cities in a region more so than any other city. So when they think about us, they think about Kansas City as a region, not just a city. That makes a big difference. We had so many states support our bid. No other city approached it that way. We had Iowa, Oklahoma, Arkansas, of course, Illinois, all of those states supported Kansas City's united bid, and that really stood out. And then when you think about Chiefs Kingdom and the power of Sporting KC and the KC Current fans, that shows up. We, and of course, the Current, having announced the new stadium, happened just days after our site visit. They were already in another city on a site visit when we held that news conference with the Current. And I called U.S. Soccer, and we're like, we want to make sure everyone knows about this. And they're like, oh, we are watching live while we are on a bus in another city being driven to other training facilities to look at.
Wow.
The last piece of the puzzle for FIFA for us, and I shouldn't say last piece. There were, of course, hundreds of pieces of information. But another big piece was how easy we are to get around. Even though we were graded low on transportation, once they got here and we were able to prove that time they spent with Kansas City, we were able to take them to all of our opportunities for training facilities and base camps and see all of the stadiums and still have time to catch a soccer game that night. We'd hosted the women's national team against Korea. We had time for dinner and time to, you know, sightsee a little bit. They get to Miami and Atlanta, they couldn't get to everything they needed to see because of traffic. That's a game changer all of a sudden, to be able to get around where you need to go.
Let me tell you something.
I know where he's going on this.
Bring up Miami and traffic. I still have nightmares trying to get around that town when the Chiefs were down in the Super Bowl. Todd Lebo, who's I think as even keeled as anyone, has said he will not return to that city after the experience we had. Seriously, with the traffic, just trying to get back and forth to our hotel, it was awful. And people can roll their eyes when we talk about that, but that is a big deal because it was that was one of the best weeks professionally in my life. But the one thing that was horrible about it was the traffic and trying to get around to everything. And we had to miss some of the events because the traffic was so stupid. Now, the other question I have for you is, when you're making your case to FIFA about why Kansas City is the spot, is the place, at what point do you mention Nate Buchanan? Is that like really at the beginning or towards the middle?
It was not early on.
Right.
But
okay.
It did
come
up a little later.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's because you saved the best for last.
Right.
I mean,
I get
right,
it. You know,
right.
You don't
right
wanna,
there,
so later on.
Hey,
not
and, and you know, I worked with Lebo for many, many years.
Sure.
So that does surprise me that he would be frustrated because he is a calming person.
That's what I mean. Like, if you make him mad about something, then
surprising.
You know you've done the trap. Also, speaking of that, Don Proctor, our good friend, just texted me and was very angry that I did not introduce you as one of Winnetonka's finest. So I apologize. And we are. So, hey, Northlanders, we got to represent, Kathy. That's all I can
That's
say,
right.
to be honest.
That's right.
Well,
I agree with that.
We're visiting with Kathy Nelson right now. This is a part of our Women's Sports Weekly Spotlight. And that's one of the things we're trying to do is every week, you know, put a spotlight on women's sports or women in sports. And Kathy, you're one of the first people we wanted to talk to. Presented by Margaritas, our man Dave said that every guest we have on the show, he wants to have give a $50 gift card to Margaritas. So, Kathy, you're going to get some delicious.
The hosts, do they get one of those too also? I'm just curious.
You know, you don't have to take us to Margaritas with you, Kathy, if you don't want to. But, you know, we would love to, you know, have some chips and salsa with you if you don't mind.
And if Proctor's listening, now I'm going to have to take him.
Oh, yeah, he'll just show
that
up.
That would be a good. But I'm thinking staff party in our future. We deserve a little break right now with everything we have going on.
You ain't kidding.
Let's talk about some of the other things that you have going on then while we're at it, Kathy. And this maybe ties in because one of the things that I first thought of when you said that one of the biggest strengths of Kansas City for the World Cup bid is how easy it is to get to all these other places in the country in terms of being a four-hour flight. As a person who travels sometimes for work, I do get frustrated right now that there don't seem to be a lot of direct flights out of the current airport. Mm-hmm. But every time I go to KCI now, I see that airport being constructed, the new one,
right,
that I'm hoping is going to change a lot. How important was it for the FIFA folks to actually not just see renderings of an airport, but the actual construction going up? And how important was that as we transition to the conversation about the draft coming up for the NFL? Where are we with all that, and how important is that airport component to it?
So the airport was critical. We would not be talking about the World Cup in Kansas City, the potential of the World Cup here, if there was not a new terminal. International travel is critical to the success of World Cup. So, of course, the airport was a game changer for us. I believe we would have been eliminated early on had we not had that that opportunity to present that new airport. So it is critical moving forward in all of our events, though. But for the NFL draft, we were awarded the NFL draft back in 2018 prior to any discussion or vote or anything about a new airport. It will absolutely be helpful, but we were already awarded the event. Now, it is a game changer in everything else that we're talking about bringing to town. And it really helped us secure the NCAA Division I Men's Wrestling Championship in 2024.
Yes.
The new airport was one of the reasons that was a big deal to land that.
And so I also want to ask you about, you know, everyone's excited, obviously, about the NFL draft being here. And having seen what it looks like in other cities, Can you at least paint the picture a little bit of what we can expect? Because a lot of people have asked me, like, you know, what's this going to be like for people that want to, you know, visit and attend it? And it's something that's been such a TV event for so many people. I can't wait just to see what it's like to be able to attend it and everything that's going to be going on in association with it. It's going to be awesome for football fans.
Right. You're going to want to book your vacation now. The NFL draft is a free event for fans. So we want you to come down on Thursday, opening night of the draft. We want you to bring your families down on Saturday. There will be lots to do. They have created this almost like an amusement park type of feel where there's activation around it. There are opportunities for you to see history of the NFL, Super Bowl rings. There are locker rooms from all of the clubs. There's punt, pass, and kick drills. It is a massive, massive footprint. I think Vegas's footprint, and ours will be very similar, was about 1 million square feet of space.
Wow.
So even though the draft stage is significant, and you know, you'll want to watch what's happening on the draft stage, and you'll want to be involved in that. We call it the Sea of Humanity, like the parades we had. But there are also things to do and see and interact with. Of course, we're proud. Our goal is right now to focus on Kansas City food and beverage and how do we connect the dots there. We have not really started all of the detailed planning. That will not start until this summer with the NFL when they come in July. And once they get feet on the ground and all of this starts to take shape, that's when we'll really start to get a feel for what that is like. But I've been to every draft. I've been to the draft when it was in New York. I missed one year. I missed Cleveland that year. But every other year I've attended. And to see it in person is hard to explain as an NFL fan and as a Chiefs fan, when you see that sea of red, but you see every other color, it's like the Big 12 tournament, when you see every other team's school color, it just makes you proud to think that we're the heartbeat of that event for this year.
You've been to that many drafts, huh?
Yes.
That's crazy. The idea that it would ever come to Kansas City, back when it used to be like in the same place every single year, would that have even crossed your mind?
Well, so when I was in New York with it, no, they hadn't even talked about taking it on the road. But as soon as they moved it to Chicago, Jeremy Slavin for the Chiefs called and said, "Hey, I think you and I need to go check this out." I'm like, well, how did they get it? And what in the world? What is going on? And so we were there the very first year. We attended Chicago twice. And then it was in Philadelphia and Dallas, of course. And as it's been moved around, it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And I just cannot wait to showcase Kansas City. And for everyone around the region, how easy, again, we are to get to welcome everyone here to celebrate the sport of football.
Kathy Nelson's our guest. Hey, Kathy, a couple other things I want to ask you about while we have you on the air. Camp Wynn. And you know, I've got twin girls that just recently turned 13, so I know they're outside of the age bracket for Camp Wynn. But it's the favorite thing I have in my life is coaching my girls in basketball, watching them compete in track and volleyball and now softball. And so tell us about Camp Wynn. And I know that a couple of the sessions are sold out, but there's a couple of more that are still available. Tell us what all that entails.
Yeah, we started Camp Wynn, oh my gosh, close to 18 years ago. And we started it with 50 girls. And we decided on 16 different sports and fitness activities that we would teach these girls. Some of them they may or may not be familiar, or they may be familiar with. Others, you know, lacrosse and pound and field hockey. They in rugby, they may not be. So we're trying to open the door for young girls to get an eye on what is out there. How do we engage? How do we get you excited to participate in sport and make it comfortable to get into a sport that you might find a passion? I have two girls as well. They're older, but they both grew up through Camp Wynn as they were 6 years old all the way through 12. And then also, even your daughter now, your daughter's at age 13, we use team captains and junior team captains. So if you have girls ages 13 through 18, they can volunteer and get some great volunteer hours where they're also getting those leadership skills and opportunities to participate while helping the younger girls. So we have grown to 4 full weeks of camp. And we'll have about 1,000 girls come through the program now.
Oh, wow.
And we use all kinds of coaches from club coaches to college coaches, Olympic coaches. They will come in and teach their sport. So you'll get a sample of everything that you can think of, any type of unique sport, even yoga and Zumba, like I said, fitness activities. But then really, again, we want these girls to find a way, an entrance into a sport that they may not have understood or known about.
Okay, so we're visiting with Kathy Nelson. Another thing I know is on the calendar, because I received an email from a guy that you might know named Dave Borchert.
Oh, boy.
inviting me to the Kansas City Sports Commission Award Show on June 9th, and I've never been before. So I'm really excited about this, to get invited to go. What am I in for? What's going on June 9th?
Well, thanks for bringing that up. So we focus inside the Sports Commission walls in our office. We focus on three things. We focus on getting people to participate in a sport, whether that's running the marathon. We just held our Kansas City Triathlon this past Sunday, Camp Wynn. We want to give you opportunities to participate in a sport. The second thing we focus on is spectating. We want you to spectate sports. That's another thing that FIFA was impressed about in the NFL draft is Kansas City shows up to celebrate sports. And then our third thing is celebrate. And that's what our Kansas City Sports Awards on June 9th is all about, is celebrating sports in Kansas City. So we have 6 award winners, local award winners. We also own the Win for KC, of course, our Women's Intersport Network Sports Awards that happens in February. This is our Sports Commission Sports Awards, same type of thing. We'll do great videos on our award winners, tell their stories, and just have a lot of fun in celebrating sports. So we're honoring this year Brenda Van Langen, Nate, that I know you know very well.
Yep.
And honoring Vahe Gregorian for going into the Basketball Hall of Fame. And then we're also honoring Bill Self. He'll be there with us in the KU Jayhawks victory and the KC Current and their ownership team and everything they've done. So Brittany, Chris, and Angie Long will be with us. So just a really great way. Oh, and Ioka Lee, our K-State women's basketball player that's
incredible.
Broken all kinds of records.
Yeah,
yes.
Incredible so player. Set the all-time NCAA
fun.
Record for points in a game, right?
Yes, yes. So we have so many things to celebrate for not only our city but for our region, and that's what June 9th is all about.
That's awesome. And for more information on all of this that we've talked about, sportkc.org. For more info on all the great things that the Kansas City Sports Commission and Foundation are doing. Hey, Kathy, we'll have to have you on the show more often because there is no shortage of topics to talk about. And thanks a lot for everything you do and helping to make Kansas City such a great sports town. And it sounds like the best is yet to come.
Well, thank you, guys. I'm a huge fan, and I appreciate all you do to help us promote everything happening.
Kathy, we'll talk to you soon. We appreciate it.
All right, take care.
That is Kathy Nelson. So, boy, it sounds like those sports awards are right up your alley with all, you know, Kansas basketball and the Current and your former broadcast partner, Brenda. And, you know, that's...
Vahe Gregorian.
Well, you said you don't like Vahe in the past.
Well, we've got a running feud, right, me and him. He's a very...
I love him. To me, he's one of the warmest, most sincere people in the world. And I couldn't believe it. He said, well, I don't care for him.
He really is one of the nicest,
right,
most sincere people ever meet. He is officiating the Allie Trost-Tom Martin wedding, by the way, just a couple of days after that award show. So he's going to be a busy guy.
Long time ago, you may not know this, would have been 2008. I emceed the Kansas City Sports Commission.
Well, look at you.
Sports Awards. Long time ago, you know.
They say that's what took it to a whole nother level was when you emceed it.
Yeah.
I've not been invited to emcee it. I've just been invited to be there.
I'm quite sure an attention whore like yourself will find its way on stage in some way, somehow.
I'm clearly not I'm not so subtly fishing for that right now.
This isn't the bathroom. How'd I get on stage?
Oh,
<hello. laughs>
oh, there's a microphone here.
I got
here.
A story here for you. That was good to talk to Kathy about all those things happening.
Man, there's a lot going on in Kansas City sports. Pretty cool. Pretty great.
Mm-mm.
Hopefully she's keeping Dave Borcher in line, you know.
Oh, Jared Sutton just sent us a question for Kathy, but it's too over. It's
when are you going to get an NBA team in Kansas City?
That's exactly
City?
What yeah. he says. He wanted to know about NBA expanding.
How did I know that?
Jared, I want it. Okay, I
want
to make it happen. So we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Brian Haney about a big event that he's got coming up for a great cause. We'll also try to bury the hatchet with this play-by-play man feud that's been brewing between Nate and Brian over the
imagining
years.
All these feuds. You got me feuding with Marco's mom.
Okay,
you got
I
me feuding with
Vahe
Gregorian, and now you got me
I don't
feuding
have
with
you
Brian
doing
Haney.
Nothing, okay.
Feuding
Look,
with you,
she
pal.
Listens to the show and forms her opinion on what she hears. And then she asks
she
me
the misinformation that you're putting out there.
I am her confidant. Because hey, you were invited to the event where we bonded over a delicious margarita flight.
And jello shots.
Stephen beat you to the first impression.
That's right. Well, you know.
Brian Haney's right up there with Vahe Gregorian in terms of nicest people in Kansas City broadcasting.
Which is bizarre why you feud with both of them. Back after this on WHB.